You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
Welcome to the RSO podcast. I'm Margot Stedman, Education and Community Engagement Director, and I'm here today with Carl Raza, our principal bassoonist.
Hello.
So we were talking about this before we started recording, but I think it's really exciting to share that this is your 15th season with the RSO as our principal bassoon.
It is. Yeah. We were just kind of doing the math. And when did you start with the RSO? And I realized 2007, 2008 was my first year. So it's been 15 years, folks.
Yay!
You're stuck with me.
That's amazing. Well, we wouldn't want it any other way. And we are also just talking a little bit about all your experience, how you've been involved for so long in playing in chamber groups, being a teaching artist, teaching, playing with orchestras. And now we have the pleasure of having your talents to program this beautiful upcoming chamber concert.
Oh, I'm so excited about it, too.
I'm so excited about it. So I think without further ado, let's just kind of dive in. Tell us a little bit about the process. How did you get on board with this chamber concert?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, well, how do I begin with this? The first piece that I programmed, it has been sort of a bucket list piece of mine for a number of years now, the Francais Divertissement for bassoon and strings. For some time, I've been tossing around the idea of like, you know, I should really email Michelle and be like, hey, if you could ever find a place to put this piece on a chamber concert with RSO, I'd love to do it. But, you know, in typical Carl fashion, I never got around to actually writing that email. And and then she approached me this fall about being a program consultant for the January chamber concert. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. And can I play Francais? So that's sort of how that worked out. That was the first piece that I, you know, have been sort of on my back burner, like, gosh, I need to find a place to play this sometime.
And it's beautiful. I listened to it and it's just, there's a playlist on the website. So if people haven't listened, they should. But it's just this haunting melody. I cannot wait to hear it in the church. I think it's gorgeous. I was not familiar with it before I saw it on this program and I went and listened and I was like, wow, I can see why it's a bucket list piece for you.
Yeah, yeah. There are four movements, and the second movement is very slow and very haunting. And as my mother would say, it's very haunting. It's in a minor key. but yeah, the other movements are very you know, buoyant and bouncy and effervescent, and you know, maybe a little more virtuosic than you might be expecting from a bassoon. Provides a fun challenge for me as well.
Well, I know that when you played on one of our art museum chamber concerts last season, we had comments from patrons. I don't know if you've ever heard the bassoon solo like that, or heard it singled out where they could actually hear it. And it grew quite a fan base. People were like, I didn't know I loved the bassoon. So I think it's exciting to feature it and for people to hear all the many colors of the instrument and the tone, and just in a way that we don't get to when you're back in the orchestra.
I love that too. Part of my mission in life is to demonstrate to the world that the bassoon is indeed a real instrument.
Yes.
And we only step out in the orchestra every so often. You know, Tchaikovsky wrote some terrific bassoon solos, and Stravinsky and Shostakovich. You know, I could go on. So we certainly do get our moments of glory in the orchestra, but you know, a lot of people wouldn't even know they know what a bassoon is. And it's something you hear everywhere, but you don't know if you know it.
So I was just thinking that we didn't talk about this, but now I'm kind of like, give us some tidbits on the bassoon. What do we not know that we don't know about the bassoon?
Well, okay, so here's my little you know, when I'm getting my hair cut or if I'm in a grocery store and people say, what's a bassoon?
Yes.
Well, it's the lowest of the woodwinds and it's the funny looking one. And a lot of people think that when they're thinking oboe, they're thinking bassoon. They call the bassoon an oboe.
Interesting.
But they're actually thinking of the bassoon. So it's the funny looking one. It sticks up in the air. It's got the little white ring at the top. The mouthpiece sticks out, and you hold it across your body. And how else do I say it? It's rather funny looking compared to, you know, some of the other woodwind instruments. And it's a double reed instrument. So we make our own reeds and, you know, all this little craft.
Yeah, I don't know if people know that you double reed players, you all make your own reeds.
Oh, yes. It's quite a process. It's our lot in life. But yes, we start with little pieces of cane that get folded and cut and shaved and split and all kinds of other things.
So how long does it take to make a reed? on average?
It's hard to say because we make them in big batches and many of them don't survive.
Okay.
So it's like fish or something in that you make a couple of dozen and maybe three or four of those couple of dozen are really good concert reads. And
wow.
The rest are either garbage or maybe serviceable.
For practice, or
okay. Something. But yeah, it's quite a process. That it's just part of the gig for oboes and bassoons.
When do you start learning how to do that? Because I wouldn't think that every middle school or high school bassoonist is making reeds.
No. Probably not. And it's not exactly a practical skill for a high school double reed player necessarily, because they have so many other things to juggle.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I learned about it in high school at mm-hmm. summer camp and dabbled a little bit. But when I got to college or music school, that was when my bassoon teacher was like, okay, well, the training wheels come off. You can't buy them from me. You can't buy them from your old teacher. You can't buy them from anyone else. You have to make them yourself. And this is going to be painful for about a year. But
wow.
Sink or swim, this is, I will help you. But here's, that was when I learned, okay, well.
So it's like a year long kind of apprenticeship with the teacher.
In a way, yeah. And, by the end of that year, we could all kind of survive on reeds that we made for ourselves. It wasn't pretty at all times, but, after about a year of making them, you kind of figure out what to do. But you also have to accept that no matter how many years you've been doing this, so many of them are just not going to survive no matter what you do, because you're trying to make a vibrating thing out of a plant and you want it to do this very specific thing. And that plant just, might not be up for it.
Wow. Okay. I feel like that makes you all have more patience maybe in life. Maybe you guys, that's why you're like a more chill section.
Maybe. I don't know. Or unclear.
Unclear. Okay, back to the programming. Another thing I love about this program is the diversity on it. I think diversity of eras, diversity of composers, diversity of types of music. It's really exciting. So we talked about the Francais. What else is on this program?
Okay, so we also have a movement of the Bacchianus Brasileiros No. 6 by Villa-Lobos.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Brazilian composer, and he wrote this series of pieces for different instruments that was inspired by, that sort of classical Bach counterpoint.
Mm, yes.
And he married that with the, the popular Brazilian music form, the choro, which is, very virtuosic and quick and technical, and also very yearning and sighing. So you'll hear lots and lots of notes from the bassoon and the flute on that piece. And it has a lot of that, just running 16th notes like a Bach piece. But it also has this undeniably South American yearning to it, or Central
yeah.
American yearning to it. It's really wonderful music.
Lovely. All right. And then we're doing Valerie Coleman.
Oh, yes. Valerie Coleman. So the first Valerie Coleman piece I ever played was just this past fall.
Wow. Okay.
And I've known about her, or rather her first group, the Imani Winds. They were founded in the late 90s and kind of came to the fore in the early 2000s as this, diverse woodwind quintet based out of New York. And the oboist and the bassoonist in that group were Oberlin graduates. And, as an Oberlin person myself, I felt a little bit of a kinship with, oh, cool, these double reed players are doing cool things in the world.
Yeah.
And so I've been following, I've been following the Imani Winds for some time. And Valerie Coleman was the founding flutist of that woodwind quintet. And it turns out she's also a prolific composer and writes wonderful music for mostly for woodwinds, but she's written for everything. And I was listening to, just kind of listening around to things to see what would fit with this program. And I came upon this piece of hers called Ruby Spheres. There are these three movements. And the third movement really stuck out to me as this really wonderful, jazz bebop, homage to Charlie Parker, if you will.
Yeah.
And the concert is called Music by Candlelight. And for some reason, I just thought of, I felt like I was sitting in a smoky basement bar on 52nd Street in New York in the 1940s when I was listening to this. So I was just like, this is so much fun sounding, hard sounding actually, but it sounds like a lot of fun. And, you know, I think that diversity in our art form is very important. And we have a responsibility to amplify diverse voices. And I just love this music. So I was like, we've got to put this on there too.
I love the visual of the 40s kind of bar. That's very fun.
So maybe not candlelight. Maybe the candles we're talking about are cigars and cigarettes in the 40s. I'm not sure. But I thought, you know, smoky bar candles. But, yeah, there are candles on the
lighting.
Tables.
Dim lighting.
Yes. Hazy.
There we are.
Dim light and haze.
Okay. So then we're going. I've already told you that the Beethoven piece is one of my favorite pieces that you've programmed. Tell us your take on it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, who doesn't love Beethoven? So since we're the Rockford Symphony, I wanted to bring something of a symphonic experience to our chamber music concerts. And the Beethoven Septet is really, in so many ways, a portable symphony. We have five strings and three winds.
So it's like a little mini chamber orchestra.
It is a little mini chamber orchestra. The only thing we don't have is percussion, but I don't believe there was even percussion in his first couple of symphonies anyway, at least not the first. So we have two violins, viola, cello, bass, clarinet, bassoon, and horn. So it really is a mini symphony, and it's in six movements. Not all of them are very long, don't worry. but it really has that kind of, it has a lot of elements of Beethoven's writing for symphony. He wrote this around the same time as he was writing his second symphony, right? 1799, 1800, right at the turn of the century. So it has a lot of that, you know, I like to call it the clarisoon, the blend of the clarinet and the bassoon that you hear in the symphonies all the time. And it's part of that sound that, you know the bassoon, you just don't know you know it.
Yeah.
That clarinet and bassoon blend, it's everywhere in here.
Well, the reason that it's my favorite mm-hmm. is because I feel like I'm in a Jane Austen novel when I listen to this piece. I love Jane Austen. I picture myself in a beautiful Regency gown, in a beautiful house at a house party, and this is the music that's on in the background. This is the soundtrack of every Jane Austen novel for me.
That's exactly right, actually.
And it was written in that time period. They actually share a birthday, and it was last Saturday, December 16th, on our Holiday Pops concert.
Ooh!
It was they're 5 years apart in age.
I didn't realize that they were that
yes.
contemporary.
So they actually are contemporaries.
Okay.
And this piece to me is just everything. I love it.
And that is exactly right. And that this piece is based on, you know, the serenade, the art form of the serenade. And serenades were what was played in for royalty. This is royal
yes.
music for played for kings and queens at high teas and balls and dinner
all
parties,
the things I
cocktail
love.
Parties. So that's exactly right. And all the things that we love. Yes.
Yes.
And this is the music that would have been playing. They didn't have phonographs then. They brought their own symphonies or
and
their
yeah,
own chamber groups.
You have seven players, portable, can fit in a nice little niche of some kind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. And there are some, you know, really wonderful, you know, regal moments. I'm thinking especially of the minuet. The third movement is, you know, especially stately, I think.
Yes. So I'm extra excited about that piece.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I'm excited to play it too. In that, well, I love Beethoven. And it's such a terrific piece. And I thought it would be, you know, a nice way to bring a mini symphony to a chamber concert in Rockford.
Yay. I have one final question to just talk a little bit bigger picture about chamber music. How is it different for you as a musician preparing for it? Why is it important to play chamber music? I mean, we see the orchestra on stage all the time. Chamber is something we don't get to experience that often in Rockford. Tell us a little bit more on your thoughts on that.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, well, one of the things is that, well, we don't have a conductor to tell us how fast or how slow to go or when to take time or when to speed up. We have to make those decisions ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to come to an agreement. So, mm-hmm. you know, we all sort of have to arrive at rehearsal. We all have to be prepared with our own parts, but we also have to approach things with a very open mind. And, you know, somebody may have strong feelings about how something should go, and somebody may disagree with it. But, you know, sometimes we do have to do a little bit of negotiating. Like, well, I'd really like to take a little bit of time here, because if we don't slow down, then we really miss a moment here. And
the collaboration aspect.
So there really is it's a different style of collaboration. It's not to say that working with a conductor is not collaborative, because it absolutely is. But, you know, we're all deferring to the conductor in the symphony. And
chamber music sounds like it's more of a democracy.
It's a bit more democratic, yes, in that way. Well, you also have to have really it's really great to play chamber music, because it really sharpens your skills. You have to have an excellent internal metronome, and you have to be able to, you know, hear what's going on around you and not just be thinking like, all right, well, here's the bassoon part and I played it in time and in tune, so there you have it.
You're much more exposed.
You're exposed, and you have to be very, very flexible as well. That's sort of a challenge that I really like. You know, I like, there's something very gratifying about sort of like everybody holding hands and staying in sync together, without any words, and with our own, just with our own nonverbal cues.
Yes. So that's something the audience can be watching too, is how are you all enacting that democratic process in the moment during the concert? I think it's something you might not be watching for if you didn't know that difference. I think a lot of people think, oh, they've rehearsed it and they're showing up and they're playing it and going. But the beautiful thing about experiencing live music and a live performance is that something could change in that moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that we're all experiencing it together.
Yep.
With
yep.
you, the
yes.
musicians.
And you can even look around too, and that you'll probably see more musicians making eyes at each other, not in a suggestive way, but you know, just checking in with each other and trying to read each other's musical cues, because we're not all just focused on the conductor and trying to mirror his or her movements. We're trying to check in with one another, like, oh, I'm with the violin here, so I should be looking over there and make sure I'm synced up with them, or oh, this is a cello and bassoon duet, and then the viola joins us, or something like, you know, you're sort of always thinking like, who am I dancing with right now?
Ooh, that's a lovely way to think of it. A dance that you're changing partners with.
Yeah, yeah. And the bassoon gets to dance with everybody in some sort of way. We're rarely the star of the show, but we partner well with
yes.
many.
Yes, I love that. Are there any other final thoughts that we should share with our audience as they're preparing to come to this concert?
I don't know. This is some of my favorite music to play, and most of it I have not played before. So I'm really excited for this. In the spirit of coincidences, we talked about this being my 15th year of being an RSO member. It will be very close. The day of the concert, January 14th, 2024, will be very close to the 30th anniversary of my very first bassoon event, if you will. I went to my teacher at home in New Hampshire, Janet Polk. She would do this this bassoon day at University of New Hampshire, and she would have vendors, and she would have lectures, and she would give a recital in the afternoon. And I had just started playing the bassoon a couple of months before, and I was this brand new, fresh faced, you know, 3 month bassoon player showing up at the university for this big bassoon day. And gosh, if I look back at the calendar, it was mid-January on a Saturday, not a Sunday, mid-January of 1994 that I, you know, was a newly minted bassoon player and attending my very first live bassoon recital. So it's sort of like this is a 30-year landmark of my bassoon origin story, if you will.
Yeah, to be programming this and doing all of these pieces. Oh, I love that. What a beautiful connection. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, sure. Thanks.
Well, if you don't have tickets and you're listening, you can get them at rockfordsymphony.com. You can call the box office. You can purchase them online, or you can come to the door the day of the concert, which you already said is January 14th. It's at 3 p.m. It's at First Lutheran Church in Rockford, and we hope to see all of you there. Thanks so much, Carl, for sitting down to talk about all this.
Oh, yes. Thanks for having me, and I hope to see you all there.